Hey, before we jump into this week's podcast, I just wanted to send a quick note that I am taking sponsors for the Healthy Competition podcast. So if you want to get your name in front of hundreds of product marketers and competitive intel practitioners, reach out to me at andy@healthycompetition.co and we'll talk things through. All right, onto the episode.
So Jessica is at HubSpot. She just got back from maternity leave, so congrats. Hope you're enjoying time back with HubSpot. I would love to jump in and just learn a little bit about you. Just a quick introduction. Why don't you give us just a minute of a little bit about you and how you joined HubSpot.
Awesome. Okay. So yeah, I am a new mom. My baby is 4.5 months old. So I apologize in advance if you hear her. She is home downstairs. So hopefully she doesn't make a sound guest appearance, but she might. Yeah, so I actually started my career off like your guests from one of your June podcasts, which is as a military intelligence officer in the Army.
That's Tracy. Tracy's in the audience. That was she was on that podcast. That's awesome.
Yeah, Tracy and Sam Ronaldo, who I used to work with at HubSpot. I was in the Army for a little while as an officer deployed to Afghanistan. After I got out of the Army, I did some sales work. It was like a straight sales / strategy role, like sales strategy role for Lutron Electronics. That was in New York City, in commercial sales for Lutron as a manufacturing company. I really liked that role because it was very competitive. We were not number one in the market, so I had to do a lot of competitive work there. Ended up moving to Kansas because my husband got out of the Army, or was still in the Army and had to move to Kansas, And I was out of the Army, so I went and got my MBA at K-State. And then after that, I moved here, did some strategy work for TE, but that wasn't a super competitive role. And I think CI was just in my heart and it was just calling me to come back to it. And so a recruiter reached out to me about a HubSpot CI role, and I had had HubSpot, I had wanted to join HubSpot for maybe 2 or 3 years at that point. I had my eye on it. It was one of my goals to work there. So immediately I was like, yes, and haven't looked back. Love working there. It's a great culture. And I love that I'm in a pure CI role again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so much easier when you already know the product and you already love it and you're not just doing it for your job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I remember when I was at TE, we had an icebreaker where someone said, pick 3 brands that represent your personality, are a good, personality fit for you. And one of them was HubSpot that I picked.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. I felt the same way when I moved over to ClickUp. It was a very similar kind of it was a little bit different because I didn't know about ClickUp before I started having conversations about it. But as I dove deeper, I was oh my God, super colorful and super goofy, just like me. This will be great. It'll work out. And so, yeah, it definitely makes the process of competing and building out competitive programs a lot easier because you're innately you're a little bit more attached to the brand and you also want to see it win, you know?
Yeah. It's easier for you to get what the brand's about. And then when you get that, you understand the strengths and you know how to sell to those strengths. I think that's really what competitive is about. It's not about uncovering other competitors' weaknesses. It's about really just highlighting your strengths in the best way possible.
Amen. Well, let's talk a little bit about HubSpot. So how long have you been with HubSpot? Number one, how many years again?
I have been at HubSpot for 2 years now.
Okay. So 2 years, how has the competitive intel team changed over the course of that 2 years? And how has your role changed?
Yeah. Okay. So when I first joined the role, I worked with Sam Ronaldo, who you had on the podcast. It was just me and Sam. So before I joined, it was just Sam. And I think what happened, I wish Sam was here to correct me. I'm pretty sure what happened is they had an intern and Sam was like, I need more people on the comp intel team. And so he had the intern do some kind of project to show that we were like understaffed on the CI team at HubSpot. And did like research about other CI teams. Okay. Yeah. And that's like all the intern did. And then presented that. And they were like, man, we need more people on the CI team. And I guess they were kind of like, oh, well, Sam has a military background. So they hired me, had a similar background. And it was really great because Sam and I had like a very, like we had a similar language that we had talked to each other about things because we had that military intelligence background. So it was just him and I for a while. And that was still like, that was really hard still, because just having to.
Because at that point, how many people, how many employees were at Hubs? I mean, it's still thousands, right?
Yeah, it's like I don't know, over 6,000 or whatever. So it's a lot. It's just, and it was like, not like we were just doing enablement. We were doing like all of it, just us. And then eventually we got an analyst. And then Sam ended up leaving, and it was just me and that analyst for a while. And then they were like, okay, well, we're going to promote you. You're going to be the manager of this team. And I was like, okay, well, I need more people, and really like pushed for it and pushed for it, and came up with like a plan saying, if I had more people, here's what I could do. And around then the economy started to like really starting to get tight, which I don't know if anyone else on this call feels the same way, but that's like always great for Incomp Intel, because suddenly we become like the most valuable voice in the room. You know, like everyone cares about competitive when things are hard, when it's hard to compete. So suddenly they were like, oh, maybe we should give more headcount to competitive.
Yeah.
And so they gave us two more analysts. So now there's three analysts and me on the team. Nice. So I went from more of an IC role to a management role.
And I know that HubSpot has multiple products, right? You have like the CRM, you have like the traditional kind of like marketing automation tool. I know that you have like HubSpot, I think you have an operations tool, and I mean, you have a million different tools, to be honest, other than just like those main flagships. So how do you have your team structured? Is it like by product? Is it by segment, persona, or what is it right now?
Right now we have it. It's sort of by persona in a way. So we have it split up by product, but we have our products split up almost like by persona. So we have Marketing Hub, CMS, and Operations Hub in its own little bucket. And there's an analyst for that. And then we have an analyst that focuses on Sales Hub, Service Hub, and Commerce. And then I focus more on like platform-wide stuff. And then we also have a third analyst, and she focuses on buyer enablement. So just because we're really trying to push and refresh our buyer enablement, so it's easier for buyers to like self-serve with CI. So that's exclusively what she's focusing on right now.
Buyers to self-serve with CI?
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
so how does that work?
So you know how like all of us have, especially in like SaaS, we all have those, you know, HubSpot versus Salesforce comparison pages, or like, you know, for example, she is in charge of refreshing and updating all of those PDFs that reps can give to buyers that are buyer facing. So really just making sure that there's a lot of enablement content out there that if buyers need that information and they're not directly on a call with reps, that they have something that they can hold on to and look at that compares.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Fascinating. Okay. So not to be confused with internal enablement, which, you know, when we were promoting this, this interview, in my LinkedIn post, you were like, hey, come join. And, you'll learn how the CI team maintains a 90% plus sales engagement with our battle cards. So, all right, I got to ask you then, how do you get such great engagement on your battle cards internally?
I will say, like, before I talk about like our strategy, how we do it, one of the number one things we did is made the decision to start using Clue last year. And it was a really big investment financially for our team, but it has really paid off. So I'll just plug Clue quickly here for that.
Yeah.
I think like what we realized is we're spreading ourselves too thin. We weren't focused enough with our battle cards. So we really took a step back and thought like, what competitors do we really need to focus on? Did some analysis of like our deals data. And then from there, we kind of came up with a plan of attack of how we wanted to reorganize our battle cards by best practices first, like CI best practices. So we did things like having why HubSpot wins section and objection handling section. And the objection handling sections has like no say show in the section with talking points. And then once we did that, what we thought should be in the battle cards, we did a small pilot with a group of sales and CS reps. And we said like, okay, use these for 6 weeks. You guys are the only ones that have access to these and give us some feedback. And we had like a Slack channel with feedback. And they gave us tons of feedback, both positive and constructive. And then we turned around and redid the battle cards again. And then from there, we had like a very extensive launch plan. So we had the launch at the SCO. So like every sales rep had eyes on. It was part of the training. There was a role play session, including the new battle cards. And then instead of making them do like mandatory training on top of that with like longer training of how to use them, we reached out to all the sales managers and we said, hey, do you want us to come to your team meeting and teach you all how to use these battle cards and how to sell competitively? And some of the managers raised their hand and we were like, cool, we will custom build training for you. And we did like custom role plays for those teams, depending on the sales teams. So that
seems like it was a super hands-on like deployment. Yeah. And over a long period, like how long of a period of time was this?
We
from like when you were first starting, I guess, building the content to when you would say like deployed, like this is the new process.
We rebuilt about 52 battle cards. And
52.
One analyst oh time. Over so that was 6 months.
You and one other analyst. Oh my
God. Over 6 months. And then after we rebuilt them, we were about to launch. That's when I got promoted and executed the launch plan. So that was the beginning of this year that we executed the launch at the SCO. And then after that launch and the training, like the other thing that we did is try to drive engagement, because I think what a lot of people make the mistake of doing is like just training and then forgetting to like put it top of mind for reps.
Yep.
So we did two things to drive that engagement. One, we did like a little scavenger hunt event. So because the name is Clue, we put little like blue paw prints, like in Blue's Clues, all of our battle cards. And then we asked reps to find them and gave them a prize if they found them. And then we also put our battle card, like we put like battle card tips and tricks in our weekly digest. And so people
were constantly- weekly digest? Is this like just a competitive digest or is it a product marketing digest?
Yeah, it's just a competitive digest. And I cannot take any credit for that one. Sam Ronaldo is the one that really built that up. And it has like huge readership. Like it was already very well established when I came on the team. So it's a really great way for us to promote any of our content. So we just kept promoting on that. And that drove engagement. And then the last thing we did right after I went on mat leave was an automation using HubSpot. So when sales reps go in and they put their like competitor field in HubSpot, if they fill that in, they automatically get sent the link to the battle card of like the competitor they just filled out. Mm-hmm. I found out recently that that's only for reps that are under 12 months tenure. So there's an opportunity for us to drive the engagement even higher.
Even higher?
That's bananas.
Hey-o. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. When it comes to the actual digest, is that something that you email or is it Slack or is it like how do people get their hands on that?
Well, we are HubSpot, so we send it out through HubSpot.
Oh, like through the email through HubSpot. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I mean, and that's nice because then we can track like the clicks and you know how it's opened and all of that. We can like slice and dice that data, which is great.
Yeah. It's nice to use your own tool. And that because at ClickUp we use ClickUp Docs. So I'll literally just like put together like my entire digest and we have like sub pages. So we'll have like the main parent page will be like a summary of what happened. And then there'll be sub pages on the side that like dives into like, okay, here's what's important for sales, here's what's important for marketing, here's what's important for product. And yeah, that was different from what I did at Zoom Info. And so it just goes to show that there's multiple ways that you can kind of go about that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like that we actually have a meeting on the calendar to like improve our digest even more, because I just think there's just new things coming out in like digest land every day.
Yeah.
There's things to learn, and I think we can even build on ours for sure.
Totally. It's one of those things that like you can kind of always iterate over time. Yeah. We had a question in the chat that I was actually wondering too. So Furhan was wondering, what does an analyst do versus a manager or versus a director?
That's a really good question, because I just made that shift. So like when I was in IC, I would say I was definitely more of a subject matter expert. So I was really like working with product and PMMs and sales on specific hubs. It's what we call products at HubSpot, go figure. So I was working on specific hubs, specific projects, and kind of like if they had any questions about those hubs, they would come to me. Now as a manager, like I do spend some of my time doing manager stuff like budget and planning and stakeholder management. But really, I think from a CI perspective, I'm more in charge of like the platform strategy. So instead of like our individual product strategy, just like how does it all fit together? Like if we're looking at other platform pairs like Salesforce, how do we compete against Salesforce as a platform, not like individual products?
Okay, that makes sense. And then what about the department that you sit under? Like it sounds like you own the budget for Competitive Intel, which is awesome. What do you roll up under product marketing or marketing, or how does it work over for you?
I think this is always a pain point for every CI team, because there's no good place for a CI team. So I wanted, after I tell you where we sit, I'd love to hear like your opinion of where the best place would be for a CI team. But we are under PMM right now. We have traditionally, I think, always been under PMM. So because of that, our budget does get like diluted a little bit, as it goes down the funnel to PMM. None of my analysts are like trained marketers, but so I know a lot of CI people are like PMMs turned CI turned CI turned PMM.
I mean, that was me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not how our team is, like our analysts are right now, but I think that that's a super valuable skill to have.
Got it. Yeah, we were, I've always reported under product marketing. Tracy here, she's very vocal about not rolling under product marketing. We've talked about that multiple times. She's talked about it on the podcast in the Slack group. Tracy, I don't know if you're around your microphone. Are you able to unmute for a second and give your spiel?
It's not my spiel.
Yeah, it is. Come on. It makes a ton of sense, to be honest. And this just goes to show there are so many different ways that you can go about it. But because you're here, Tracy, I would love to hear your perspective.
Okay,
again.
Sure. So I maintain that competitive should not be in product marketing, because product marketers are trained to see everything through rose-colored glasses. So everything is great. We are wonderful. We are the best.
This is the most
suck at anything.
Military intelligence version, by the way, Tracy.
Yes,
like
I can. So, and compete has to call out when the baby is ugly, right? They have to call out warts and all, the strengths and the weaknesses. So I think then people ask me, well, where should CI be? And I've sat in enablement and been very influential. I personally think that if a strategy function is in your company or is being formed in your company, that compete should sit there. But yeah, that's my take on it. I just don't think product marketing is the best place for it. And I've been in product marketing a couple of times now. And honestly, it just strengthens my resolve that it's not where we should be.
Interesting. Yeah. Someone in the chat asked what the constructive criticism for our battle cards were. And this goes to the product marketing talk, because we had like we have a section that's like why HubSpot wins. And one of our criticisms was it was too marketing. Layman's from sales. So.
Totally. I've had a, it, I totally agree. And I had this big kind of a realization for a while too, when I was first building out battle cards. I was super marketing-y too, especially for, you know, at the very beginning, usually I'll do a quick dismiss at the very top, which is like, hey, how, just to answer that initial question of how are you different from whatever competitor you're being asked about. And over time, I remember I met with a seller, and this was back at Zoom Info, and they were like, yeah, I'm not going to read that. Like, I'm not going to like say that out loud. Like, I can't imagine. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, I guess that's right. And I actually like spoke it out loud. Like after we got off the call, like I just recited it, and I was like, oh man, that's not very good. And
that's so a I had good to like tip. Go in.
And I just had to like tip. Go in and completely tweak how I had initially written it. But now every time I'm like, I have to be able to like say this out loud and not feel like a fool, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good tip. I'm going to tell that to my analysts. Like, okay, whenever you write anything, say it, like physically say it out loud. And if it sounds like a jerk is saying it or like a tool, like don't
then don't write it down. Yeah, yeah. It's a great proxy for being like, yeah, that's a solid dismiss. Let's pivot a little bit more to goal setting and win rates. Okay, because I think that that's another big piece, not just product marketers. I think that competitive intel, we struggle with setting goals. I think I've heard some people say that they really want CI to own competitive win rate, which right. It kind of makes sense, right? I mean, that falls under like what you would expect a CI person to own. However, you know, I've also heard the argument where we are not the people winning the deals. And so mm-hmm. we can't like really like deliver all of, we can't personally go in and impact the entirety of a competitive win rate, especially for large companies like a HubSpot. So I would love to learn how you all go about setting goals.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think like we're still like pushing ourselves to find the right answer to that. But I think where the problem is, people want it to be like black or white, like you own win rate or like you don't own win rate. And I think the answer is more complicated, and it has to do with layers, right? It's like, okay, what do you do as a team that influences win rate? And you can use win rate as like a KPI to show directionally, like it's gone up, it's gone down, kind of like how things are going. But I think win rate is a better tool to see directionally, like quarter by quarter or like half of the year, you know, H1 versus H2, what are you doing right and what are you doing wrong? So taking that win rate and layering on, what has your team done? What has your program done this quarter or this half of the year, and then look at the win rate, look at the enablement or the engagement and all of that, like leading indicators, and then say, okay, are we moving in the right direction? Are we moving in the wrong direction? I like to think of our team's goals in three buckets. So we do measure by win rate, which is tough, especially in like today's economy. Like it's hard
everyone's to losing more. Yeah,
everyone's losing more, and they're like, why are we losing more? It's like, because people don't want to spend money.
Yeah.
Like, but they don't want to spend money against anyone, you know, or like against right. anything better. But anyway, so I would say win rate. We also look at engagement with our content, because if we're making content and no one is engaging with it, then it's not important. So we need to make sure that people are engaging with it. And then three, I like to have a metric called influence, and that's super hard to measure, but you can measure things like, how many launches did we get like CI messaging in that it influenced? How many product features did we kind of like, were we a part of the conversation? How many strategic decisions were we involved in? Things like that. I think that's where we need to focus.
Yeah, those are great points. I've also in the past measured based on engagement, and just like, I mean, at the end of the day, other people are putting together like strategic projects that are aligning to specific high level company goals. And if you're putting in work to contribute to those, to contribute to those projects, then you're going to be in a good place. So that's also what I try to track and like report on whenever I'm sharing, okay, here's like what I did this quarter or this, the half of this year. There was a question that another community member, Lisa, shared before we jumped on. She wanted me to ask this question, and it kind of relates to what we're talking about right now, because we're talking about like win rates, sales a lot, enablement, but you know, there's a bunch of other, you know, stakeholders and teams that get value from competitive intel. So would love to learn how you collaborate and balance between, you know, proactive CI and reactive CI as you manage, you know, a team and a bunch of other stakeholders across, you know, executives, marketing, products, in addition to sales.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think that's like one of the hardest parts of my job as a manager is just making sure that we're getting enough face time with the right stakeholders. The easiest one is PMM, because we sit on the PMM team. So our team, like the different analysts, have monthly meetings with the PMM teams. They're very proactive. They every quarter they get a list of the projects that the PMM team is going to be working on. And then they literally put, like, we just did this in a column on the table. Here's how CI can help, you know, influence this or help supplement this. So we're really proactive in like letting teams know how we can help. For sales, we engage with that newsletter. And then also, if we have any key pieces of content or programs, I try to get in the sales manager meeting. They have a meeting, and then I just try to like get in that meeting and get my face shown. I think we need to do a better job of like having an open loop with sales. I think that's the hardest thing in CI, is having that open loop of feedback. But one thing that HubSpot has in my team at HubSpot, which we actually sit on like a smaller team on PMM called Customer Proof. That's like a whole nother like podcast talking about that team, but it's a cool team. They have like a sales and CS council. So it's people that have raised their hand and said like reps and said like, hey, I'll give you feedback on content or on these programs or on initiatives that you're doing, which is really great, because then we don't have to like go out and harass individual reps and be like, hey, can you give us feedback on this while they're trying to sell? Totally. Yeah. So there's that. And then we have a very close relationship now with strategy, our corporate strategy team. So we try to meet with them monthly as well. We try to be aligned on data. That's one big initiative we're working on this year, is like making a single source of truth for competitive data. So there aren't like 70 different win rate dashboards floating around that have like different
been there ways of measuring.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one single like agreed upon, like this is how we're measuring the win rate kind of a thing.
Like you look at something and you're like, that is not our win rate against Salesforce.
Yeah.
Like the hula hoop did you jump through to get this number? You know,
things are looking pretty good.
Yeah. You can make the numbers look however you want. So if everyone's agreed and that's from a top down from strategy, then that's good. And then we have a team called Customer Experience Measurement. So they do all like the customer surveys, like NPS and stuff. We work with them really closely. And then product, like we try to get, I think one of the biggest things that we're trying to continue to improve on is just getting in with product managers early on in feature development. Because it's a lot easier to like build competitiveness in a feature than it is to like build competitive messaging after it's already built.
Yeah. Try to like jump through other hoops, like when it's like just like not the like kind of like creating more like marketing kind of like mumbo jumbo. Yeah.
Like when I love it when a PMM comes to me and is like, hey, this launch is coming up. Can you like make a feature table? Like, can one of your analysts make a feature table showing like how we compare to competitors? And you're like,
I don't think you want that.
Yeah. we're gonna have to have some very creative language here.
Yeah.
It's a lot better when that's built in the development.
Totally. When you think about that ahead of time. No, that totally makes sense. Would you say that right now you're primarily like collaborating though, like with sales and let me take a little bit of a step back, because you mentioned something about like when you were initially presenting a project to your executive team to kind of convince them that you needed more headcount for competitive intel.
Yeah.
Right. This was like Ray. This is like way before, like I think you said, like Sam initially helped you like with this one. How often are you like presenting to executive leadership, and like how involved are they when it comes to HubSpot's competitive intel?
I would say right now, the way it's set up is like corporate, like I think corporate strategy has more one-on-one time with leadership than us, but we try to filter messaging through them and are aligned. So what I'm trying to do is like, we don't get a lot of FaceTime with executive leadership, but I try to influence teams that I know do get a lot of executive leadership, because I think that's the best way, instead of trying to like elbow your way in front of the CEO, instead of like, you know, you actually get someone that already has that on the calendar and then say, make sure you like align your goals with them. Say like, here's how our goals are aligned. Like, can you do this plug for me or whatever?
Right. And so when it came to, and this is a great question from Furhan in the chat. So like when it came to ultimately that moment where you are showcasing this, mm-hmm. this project in the hopes of getting more budget, what was the thing that ultimately resonated the most to get that budget? Like, was it a specific point? Was it the whole thing, like how the project was presented, or what was the thing that spoke the most and got you the result that you were looking for?
Well, I know like when they did the presentation, when they did that one presentation with Sam to get me hired, I know what basically they just like looked at other companies that were similar to HubSpot and that they had more competitive headcount. And then that using that fear that's like, oh, we're behind. So that's one way you can do it. The way I did it is like the analysts and I really just worked our butts off for 6 months to get all those battle cards together. And then we did that pilot, and the pilot results were like really positive. And then we just promoted the heck out of that along with our like, hey, we need more headcount. And because we had all that visibility on that pilot, we used that momentum to be like, hey, look at the great work our team is doing. Oh, by the way, we can do so much more with more people.
I love that.
Kind of like chicken before the egg, but.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Just like collaborating and like with other existing like big initiatives and using that. I mean, everyone kind of goes through ebbs and flows of like when they're working on something that is like the big thing for them for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other times when you're like just kind of you're playing a more supportive role. Those might not be the times where you want to bring up like needing more headcount, but when you have a larger impact or when you have like more visibility, that's definitely a time where you can use that to your advantage and try to ask for some more headcount or budget. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think, and just making like a plan, like not just saying, I want more headcount, saying like, here's all the things that I would do with more headcount and here's the impact it would have for the company.
Absolutely. Okay, so those are all the questions that I had initially planned. I'm going to go into the Q&A portion of this interview. We had another question that came in a little bit, it looks like maybe like 15 minutes ago in the chat. This came from Lisa. How do you keep your battle cards up to date? How do you communicate the updates and changes? And I've experienced challenges with this in the past before too, because especially like with saturated markets, you said you have 52 battle cards or you had 52 battle cards. You probably don't want to like ping sales every single time you change something, and you're probably changing them or updating them a lot. So what's your process for that?
Yeah. So we have a cadence every quarter or every like 4 months we update our, 3 or 4 months we update our tier 1 through 2 competitors. So our most important competitors. And then the rest of the competitors we update every 6 months. So we have like a cadence that we automatically go through and make sure that everything's up to date. And then on top of that, if we have any key feature launches or anything like that, we keep that, we update the battle cards as those are rolling out, and then we promote in our digest. We also have a competitive Slack channel. It's literally like hashtag competitive on our Slack. And so like, it's really easy to know what it's for. But that's a super active channel. So we will maybe like put an announcement out if it's a huge update. But honestly, we just like kind of put it in the digest if it's important. And then we really lean on GTME, like our go-to-market enablement team, and their training to highlight anything they think is important. So if it's like a super important launch, we let them know where the competitive talking points are in the battle card and then have them link that in training.
Okay. And then speaking of the competitive Slack channel, this is something that I've always kind of struggled with, especially for companies that are growing. I'm assuming, you know, because you're pretty much saying that there's a great culture of compete at HubSpot. People are very like engaged and they're plugged in. They want to help. Does that ever get noisy in the Slack channel? Like, how do you manage people jumping in and making sure that it continues to be valuable, and that when you do have an announcement, people see that, as opposed to, you know, just it being another kind of thing that people actually maybe want to hide or ignore or mute? Like, I've definitely had to do that for a couple of Slack channels, and like my biggest fear is that that's what the competitive channel turns into.
Yeah, I think our Slack channel is used for a couple different things. So one, we share like key competitive news. So if there's like a huge news story, like a breaking news story, we will post something about that there, maybe a little bit of analysis, like feature launches, stuff like that. And then the cool thing is like sometimes other people at HubSpot will catch that news story first, and then they'll go and post that, and we will hop in the thread and have a discussion. So there's like a culture of discussion on these posts. So that helps keep it like a little more valuable than just like the second category, which is people coming on and being like, hey, I'm competing against this like obscure competitor that you've never heard of that we have like 3 deals against a year. And like, I want content. So we do get that. And then
I demand content for this five-person startup.
Yeah, give me content. So, you know, if that's the case, my team and I try to turn around really quick and then get that like resolved. And then there's some way like they ask a question and other people jump in with resources, or there's a discussion about it. The way I think our team really tries to, and then we also do like announcements for content, like, you know, key big announcements. And if it's like a really big thing that I want people to see, we'll pin it to the Slack channel. So there's like a feature in Slack, if you don't use Slack, that you can pin something to the channel so it shows up. The other thing that we try to do is tag relevant stakeholders in to like force a discussion. So like, if there's a big news story, whatever, and I know the PMM that's aligned with that, I'll like tag the PMM, or tag like a salesperson that I know is like really into that topic, or someone from product or strategy. And then that makes it like a discussion forum and less of a just like question answer forum.
Totally. I've done the same thing, like looping in, like if it's a new feature update, tagging in like the product manager who it might be like most relevant to, like if they're building something similar, or if it's like a trend, like, oh, this company, they're jumping on like the AI hype train. They just like released this new AI feature, and oh, okay, like what, I know that like this is the team that is like strategically like looped into AI. Like, let's like tag them and make sure that like the conversation stays here. That's not just helpful, I think, for me, like as the CI person, to make sure that everything is organized, but also like it just, that way you're kind of like curating and connecting the dots across the organization.
Yes.
And everyone can just understand like kind of what we're doing collectively about whatever competitor news is happening.
That's a really great point. I think that's like something, a function of CI that a lot of people don't realize. We really do like connect the conversation, like pull a thread through the company. And connect different stakeholders. We also have like a generative AI competitive Slack channel. And we're trying to be more disciplined about posting stuff in there, because like the average salesperson may not care about like every little feature that's, because, you know, like you said, the people are launching features like crazy with AI right now. So it's a little noisy for like the average rep to see that.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, cool. Well, we are at the end of our time here. This was awesome getting to learn about you, getting to learn about how HubSpot does competitive intel. Where can people follow you or like connect with you if they want to learn more? Just give us any plugs that you want to send out there.
Yeah, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Hold on, I will tell you my LinkedIn thingy. I think it's Jessica Davis 2 or something is like my little thing, but if you search for Jessica Davis HubSpot, that is me, and I have my picture as an orange HubSpot background. So you can go ahead and message me on LinkedIn, ask me any questions, connect with me, chat with me about competitive or anything else you want to chat about.
Hey, you made it to the end of the episode. I have one small favor for you now. If you could please rate this podcast 5 stars wherever you're listening to it, that'd be super helpful for me. For Spotify, you can only leave a review on the mobile app, and you can do that on the top of the Healthy Competition podcast profile. And for Apple Podcasts, you have to scroll to the bottom of the show's page and click write a review. Each podcast episode takes about 5 hours of my time from beginning to end, while reviewing it should only take about 5 seconds of your time. Plus, you'd be making my day. So thank you so much in advance, and see you in the next episode.